Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in middle America. Hope you guys are all having a good week, and I appreciate you being here. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. I'm here every Wednesday night. Same time, same number, always a different link. These links all belong to the shows because once the show airs live within about an hour, it goes to on demand and you can find the shows to play back at braininjuryradio.com in the on demand section. Or if you want to take a shortcut to one of my shows, you can look on my website, which only has my shows, at inaflash.org. I'm excited to have my guest tonight. Just a quick antidote before I bring Jordan and Joy on is I remember, you know, my brain injury was in 1995. My initial brain injury was in 1995, as many of you know, and there wasn't internet, there wasn't smartphones. If there were, they were the flip kind. I can't really remember. I think they were just coming out, phones that didn't have to be hardwired to your car, mobile units, but no support groups, no social media, no computers on every desk, and it was a pretty lonely, polarizing place to be, and I didn't have an obvious tell after I had my ruptured brain aneurysm and open full-on brain surgery and a coma and all of that, and because I looked normal and spoke normal and the surgeon didn't, or the doctor, didn't warn my parents otherwise, they just said it was a success. Well, I didn't die, and that makes it a success. But nobody made any mention to my folks that I might have some problems going down the road like I did and have ever since. Things like problems with my short-term memory, it really stinks. Sensory overload, if you know, too many conversations are going on at the same time, or fluorescent lights are not my friend, that buzzing and the bright light. My thermometer's kind of broken. In fact, it's making it harder and harder to live here in middle America because the too cold and too hot kind of get to me. But in any case, there's a laundry list of different things that go with brain injury survivors that I've read before that I'm not going to cut into the guest time with, but not every survivor has all 12 of the items I collected over the years, but they all have some of them. And I remember when I first tuned into this network, I've been here every week for 12 and a half years, hard to believe, but I tuned into a show before I was a host, and I remember Craig talking about living in a world of post-it notes, and a chill went up my spine at the time. I felt like the kid who got her hand caught in the cookie jar. I didn't realize that other people did that too, and I was lucky if I remembered where I put the post-it note. And when I had them out all over where everyone could see them, of course, they think you're a little weird. And so, but that was the first time for me that there was an inkling when I heard him say that, that other people who had had traumatic brain injuries, whether it was like mine or in his case, it was a very bad car accident, he has some of the same issues that I just talked about, and it's when this network started, the reason we went seven nights a week 12 and a half years ago is the couple years before, he did it one night a week, and he was, I think, not as far out from his injury, and he was more or less processing what he was going through on the air. And what happened was an avalanche of people from around the world reaching out to him saying, oh my God, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was the only one that experienced this or that. And wow, what a great suggestion, not necessarily living in a world of post-it notes, but believe me, a lot of us were already doing it or had tried it. And so a lot of people are out there not as polarized and feeling alone, but craving that independence that we had before and not liking to, nobody likes to ask for help. And especially when it's something that you used to do proficiently yourself. And so the relationship between a survivor and a caregiver can get kind of tense after a period of time. Probably a little resentment on both parts. The survivor is resenting the fact they can't do and be who they were before. And the caregiver might be feeling, and I'm not speaking for these guests tonight, I'm just giving up how I would feel and what I've heard from others. And the caregiver might feel a little resentful because their life was also upended. As survivors, we tend to look at it from a lot of the time, but when you step back for a minute and think of the caregiver, they also had a life going on that got interrupted the day our life got interrupted, and they're trying to do what they can do to be helpful. And it's getting on our nerves. So I can see where a little resentment would come in from the caregiver because they're trying their best to care, give, be helpful. And we're wishing we didn't have to have the help. So tonight, my guests are Jordan Hallstrom and Joy Lewis, who happens to be his mom. And we're going to discuss a piece of mobile technology to make the lives of survivors as well as caregivers easier to manage. So that relationship between the survivor and caregiver that can get tense at times, using this app, which promotes more independence, organization, and a lot of tools to make the life easier, all the way around for both parties. As you guys know, or if you're new now, you know, I always put relevant websites in my program notes. And for more, you can see lightbridgeinc.com. We'll be bringing that up a couple times during the show, but just as a reminder, if you're driving or in your easy chair or laying in bed listening to the broadcast tonight, worry if you miss the website. You can look it up at inaflash.org or braininjuryradio.com when you click the link in the program notes. And with that, I am going to bring on Jordan Hallstrom. Welcome, Jordan. How you doing tonight?
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me on.
Great. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on Joy, your mom. This is Joy Lewis. Welcome to the show, Joy.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you for having us.
Really glad to have you. And I'm happy to know about this, because that relationship between the survivor and the caregiver, and we've actually got a different set in my family. My parents are in that situation now. My dad's had Parkinson's for a long time, and my mom's been caregiver for a long time. And then I just have the issues that I just talked about as a survivor, you know, and I don't do well with like that group of Google things. And so I know he doesn't seem to mind, and my husband wasn't here till a decade after my point of impact, but I know that I rely on him for a lot of things, like, and you'll probably talk about this a little bit, Jordan, you know, missing appointments, forgetting appointments. In fact, I think I even got a hold of, didn't I get a hold of you, Joy, because I was in the wrong month and initially put the wrong date for this show?
Yes, but you had it correct on something else, so you weren't completely off on that.
No, and this is what happens sometimes when you try to multitask. I'm working on a new book, and I wanted to book my shows into January, so I've been flipping through different pages of the calendar, and I'll walk away and, you know, leave it with October open. It's an old-fashioned daytimer kind of thing where I initially write down, you know, until I get the booking information and get it booked in the studio. And so I was like, oh my God, when I looked at their show, because I had put down a date that was actually, I mean, I'm on Wednesday nights, and luckily I hadn't posted it yet. So audience, you didn't know it, but I'm telling on myself that I sent them out my promo ahead of time, and I had the wrong date on it, and it was because I was looking at the wrong month. So thank goodness that got corrected, and it didn't wind up being a Sunday night, which I don't do shows on Sunday night. So we got the right date and got it all figured out. But I think things like what we're going to talk about tonight, and you know, the fact that on something like that, a doctor's appointment, something like that, I can mention to my husband, hey, will you remind me or make sure I get to this or that engagement on such and such a date a month or two down the road. But when it comes to show stuff, he doesn't really have anything to do with that and wouldn't have known unless I would have posted it wrong. And it's a good thing he acts as my editor sometimes, and that you did too, Joy. But in any case, Jordan, tell us a little bit about your experience, what you were doing before, what life looked like before for you, and what happened to usher you into the survivor community?
Sure. Well, for me, my accident occurred when I was 18 years old. And before my accident, I was a real social kind of kid. I liked to go to concerts and sporting events and all types of things, which involved crowds and people and loud noises and things of that nature. When I was 18, I was a week away from going to college. My best friend and I, who my best friend happened to be a few years older than me, so I knew I wasn't going to be seeing much of him, and we had taken an annual trip down to Kansas City to go to an amusement park down there called World of Fun. And every time we would go down there, we just had a blast, so we decided to make it an annual thing. We headed down there in the morning one day, spent the day at the park, rode rides all day long, and met his parent, who happened to be moving to Kansas, and dropped off some golf clubs from their house back where we were living. She tried to convince us to just go ahead and spend the night down there. We were both being, you know, teenage kids and said, no, we don't want to miss out on what's going on back home tonight, so we got to get back home. And we jetted off. I probably made it all but 45 minutes away from home, maybe an hour away from home, and I ended up spinning around. I believe what happened is I fell asleep. I have really no recollection of what actually took place, but my vehicle left the road. When it came back onto the road, I overcorrected, and my car spun around and hit a guardrail that was dividing the interstate. The guardrail happened to be cemented into the ground, and it basically devoured my back seat. Thank God there was no one else in the car with us at the time, so it was just my passenger, my best friend, and myself. And the back seat, like I said, was just gone. The rear passenger tire was pressed firmly against the passenger seat, in turn broke his seat, threw him forward, broke his seat belt, and the back of his head hit the top of my windshield, shattering his C4 vertebrae in the process. I hit the steering wheel. No airbags deployed, obviously. These were a rear impact. And I broke a bunch of teeth in my mouth, and my head took the brunt of the damage. I think the only physical thing I have on my body that would ever show that I was in an accident is a tiny little nick of a scar on my right elbow from glass breaking. But other than that, I was just left with an invisible unknown. And from that moment on, you know, it was a difficult ride from there on. I spent, I would say, about 4 days in the hospital, about a week on my parents' couch or a week on my mom's couch, where every day I would wake up and, like Groundhog's Day, she would have to explain to me what happened, where I was, why I was there, where my friend was. And after a few days of that going on, it finally set in. And I could finally start to kind of piece things together and remembered what happened the day before and so on. So in that whole process, a lot of things changed for me in that all the things I enjoyed doing, the concerts, the people, the being around people and in places and things like that, all went away. I started to isolate myself, really felt pretty misunderstood by a lot of the people that were involved in my life and around. And I became irritable. I wasn't sleeping the best. There were a lot of things going on. And most people thought and assumed, rightfully so, that I was dealing with guilt. And a lot of it was guilt. I will admit I still to this day even live with some amount of guilt just from being the driver. But again, I continue to move on and progress forward. But as we moved along in that process and I had the transitions in my world, he was always a solid constant in my life. And I got to realize some of the things that he enjoyed with the community of other quadriplegic and paraplegic individuals and the types of things that the hospitals had established for those groups. And so I started to kind of go, wow, that'd be great. You know, that'd be excellent if we could see something like this for people like me or people who have suffered any type of brain injury. To have any type of connection or link there would be nice. I unfortunately, I want to say it's probably been 6-7 years now. My friend had a brainstem stroke and he passed away. So he's no longer with me. And, you know, to a degree, although as painful as it is to have to live without him here, I started actually living again. And I started to take some of the things that I had been dealing with internally. And I said, man, you're living with this struggle. Why live with it when you can do something about it, right? So it may not change my life. It's definitely not going to change what I've had to live through. But maybe it helps somebody else, right? Maybe it takes some of that pain away from me, and I'm able to turn that into a positive. Because I watched my friend do it. In real time, I watched him speak to little kids at elementary schools about the importance of wearing a safety belt and doing these things and those things. And just the level of positivity that that man possessed, even after being put in a wheelchair for the rest of his life, was truly a shining star to me and motivation that when I lost him, that I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't sit and do nothing. I wouldn't allow myself to be consumed anymore. So,
right.
And my hope is that some good comes from, you know, obviously you've had to live the negative. That sucks. You know, that's terrible. But there are other people who also have had to live those things as well. It may not be the exact same thing, but it's close
right.
enough. It's in the neighborhood. It's down the block.
Yeah.
It may not be in the same house, but it's close enough. And I feel
yeah.
like if we can come together about some of these things and just forget the other things, forget the stuff that divides us and makes us different, but think about the things that do bring us together and how nice it is to have somebody that relates and just doesn't have to have the full-on explanation. They just go, oh, no, you don't have to say more. I know. Right?
Right. Well, I'm sorry for the loss of your friend, and I do get everything that you said and that you expressed feeling. One thing I can tell you, my experience with having somewhat what he had. Mine was up a little further, but they also call it a subarachnoid hemorrhage, a hemorrhagic stroke, ruptured brain aneurysm, but it's something that's immediate. And I tell you, I wrote about it. This isn't about me, but I was in a coma for 11 days and had a near-death experience. And I can tell you that I wanted very much in the midst of that experience to be where I was headed. When I got to the threshold, some might call it the pearly gates, I have a little bit of a different take on it. Some people say they have a near-death experience and talk like actually crossed over. In my opinion, in my experience, once you cross over, you're over, and there isn't a coming back. But what some people get is a glimpse of the other side. And it's not painful. when I was going through it, my spirit left my body, and I was curious and had a childlike wonder about this journey my spirit was on. And like you hear in so many of these, and it's got to be true, because I saw it, and you hear a lot of other people talk about it. You see people you know when you get there. In my case, it was my grandpa. And we had been besties. He's still the only man in my life that could get me up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I went fishing with him. I was fortunate to be the only grandkid for 18 years. And it was pretty wild because when I took this journey, and I won't dwell on that, but when I got there and I was kind of like, if you'd be at the threshold of, like, say, a Sunday picnic where there's a group of people out in the grass and you're kind of hanging back. I was looking at these different people in period dress and just kind of scanning these people, and I saw a man with his back to me, and my eyes kind of started like on the ground where the back of his shoes were, and my eyes were kind of scanning up his body as he was turning around. Our eyes met, and I had immediate recognition that it was my grandfather. What was interesting is that he presented younger than I ever knew him, and he was an orphan. There were no pictures ever taken of him. But I knew instantly it was him, and I took a step forward because just like you would run and embrace that friend or someone you haven't seen for a long time and be so happy to see them and not even think about it. It's just a reflex that you go. That's what I wanted. And without speaking, he communicated that it was as if I hit plexiglass or something when I tried to go, and then boom, I was back in my body. And he said it wasn't time. It wasn't my time yet. So I was sent back. But, you know, something that was kind of interesting, because you're from here, and when you were talking about Worlds of Fun, I've been there. I live in Omaha, and so you probably know about Boys Town. Okay, so I went out to Boys Town. I mean, that was in 95 that all that happened. And in 2012, I decided to write a book about my experience. It was really my mom bugging me every year. I'll tell you. That's one for you and your mom. I had journaled for the year I was getting better, the year of 1995. It was January 9th that my deal happened. And so for most of that year, I was journaling, and then I wanted to just forget about it and distance myself as far away from that whole distasteful, painful, who can understand that experience. And I put I'm surprised I didn't toss them or burn them, but I put them away, those notes, in a drawer. And every year my mom would say, you've really got to write a book about your experience. You really got to write a book, because I had written poetry and had a lot of articles and things published earlier on. And I said, yeah, someday I will, when I have time and my desk is clear. And I went back to work, and I did that for as long as I could, but my brain didn't operate the same as it did before. Eventually, I had to leave work, and I had met my husband, and we were married a couple years, and I was in my pity pot because I was ending a 25-year career and didn't know what I was going to do. I had done the same thing since I got out of college. That's what I was trained to do. I was clueless. So I was just in that place. And I had a real live, nice corner office. I was an executive, but I also had a home office, and my husband motioned into that room, and he said, you know, I hate to see you feeling this way. It's not a problem if you don't go back to work. You don't have to feel guilty or pressured or in a hurry. You can do what you want to do, but you know, one thing you might want to do, and he motioned into that room and he said, is write a book about your experience. And of course I looked at him and growled. I was like throwing down the gauntlet, right? Yeah, maybe I will. Well, I wound up doing that, and in telling the story, I was going to have to tell about what I just told you. And as it turns out, you know, when he was there back in the late 1920s, early 1930s, Boys Town was far, far, far out in the city. You know, the city ended at like 72nd Street or 60th Street. And so it was far, 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 far out there. And now, ironically, I live a couple miles away from Boys Town. And so it was weird. I went up to the Hall of History, and I was walking around taking in the Hall of History, and then I saw this room that said for employees only. And I felt drawn. I'm not usually somebody that does things like that, but I felt drawn to glance inside that doorway, and there were card catalogs, and some of them were obviously very new card catalogs, and a couple of them were obviously antique wood, very old ones. And I walked up to the D's, that was his last name, started with a D, and I flipped through there, and I found his name, and I had this card in my hand when someone who worked there walked in on me. And, can I help you? And I turned around and I handed him the card and I said, yeah, what do all these numbers mean on this card? And he was very nice and he took the card from me and he said, well, there was a newspaper in the Boys Town community, Father Flanagan Journal or something like that, that came out once a month or whatever interval it came out, and it had things about their community for their community in it. And those numbers signified the issues that my grandfather had shown up in. And right that minute, the man went and got them. There were only about five of them. And he got the issues out, and one of them was just a mention that he was on a baseball team. And then the next one he flipped, I got that chill up my spine again because it was a team photograph, and my eyes went right to my grandpa, who must have been maybe 17 at the time. And no one had ever seen that photo in the family, but that was more the age that he looked like when I saw him. I can't explain that to you, but it's odd that I would happen upon, and then there was another photo also in there, but no one had ever seen those photos before. And anyway, it was kind of a trip. I just want to assure you that your friend is in a place that he wants to be. And I think that obviously we miss people that aren't here anymore, but the light that he shined and the example that he set for you and for so many others was the reason, you know, that he survived and wasn't killed in that accident. But his work was done and they needed him more on the other side. But I understand you feeling guilty that you drove, but it could have just as easily been him, right? Or any other friend, any other time. It just happened the way that it did. And maybe it was so you could, long enough for you just to be able to experience those feelings and let it be a motivator to do exactly what you did. You know, what you just told me is he set an example that you wound up wanting to emulate in some ways, rather than staying in that pity pot where I was. You know, there's, you know, God let him stay to be an example and to have the rest of his life, and he made the most of it. And now that he's gone, he's not really gone. I think that you'll see him again sometime. The only difference is he'll be whole and healthy and no visible sign of anything that happened here in this existence. But I am sorry for your loss.
Yeah, it's all right. You know, it's like you said, I think everyone serves a role here. And I'm a firm believer in nobody lived like this guy did. And nobody was as accepting of all people, of all walks, as this guy was. And to have a peer like that growing up was priceless to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't mind having you, sending you the link or it's on that inaflash.org page, but 2 weeks ago I had on, I was telling you before the show, Ben and Sonia Waits, and they're a mother and son. It was a mother and son interview, excuse me, but Ben did not have a TBI. His mom actually had a TBI and raised him as a single mom with a TBI and being a cancer survivor. But Ben was born with a disease that has had him in a wheelchair his whole life. And I think it would be interesting for you when you have time, and if you want to, it was like 2 weeks ago, and it'll be identified at inaflash.org. I think it was the 17th, so that would have been like 2 weeks ago, right? Yeah, 2 weeks ago. If you can hear him, I think you'll hear a lot of your friend in Ben. Of course, I didn't even know him like I didn't know you, but when I sat there and listened to him, and I've had the challenges I've had with no tell, and when you see Ben, one thing I can do right when we get off the phone is send to your mom. Well, you know what? It's there at inaflash.org/Ben, B-E-N. You'll see his audition tape for America's Got Talent. And then I picked another one off of YouTube that I like because it was not an audition. It was in his own element. But Ben likes to sing. That's his deal. He's liked to sing since he was a kid. And, you know, he wound up being a vocal coach in Nashville. He's in his early 30s now, but his mom still lives in Louisiana where all this happened, but he got married, moved to Nashville. He's a vocal coach in Nashville, winds up getting tapped to be on America's Got Talent. He's cut 6 records of his own. He's got a ministry. I think it's at Ben Waites, WAITES.com. But I was thinking as I was listening to that interview and knowing that he had been the way your friend was, but since the day he was born, and wondering how he got such a positive attitude. And I asked him, I said, you must have your moments here and there. tell me you're always so positive. God, I can't believe that. And, you know, we kind of had a laugh about it. He's got a great sense of humor, but it's amazing. You know, we do have some choice in which way we take this. You know, once the cards are dealt and we've got the cards we're dealt, there are some things we don't have any control over, but our attitude is one of them that we do. And I know it's been really helpful for me being here to hear stories like yours and Ben's and all the people I've had as guests for the last 12 and a half years, because any time that I have those negative feelings myself or that stuff creeps back up, I just, like you said, it might not always look the same, happen the same, but a lot of times feelings, you know, feelings of grief, frustration, depression, sadness, joy, exuberance, you know, happiness, whatever the feelings are, you know, those are the same. Different things trigger it, you know, trigger those feelings for different people. But I think you might find Ben's interview reminiscent of what you were hearing and seeing from your friend, and such a motivator, a reminder, I guess. I know that I'll be listening more than once. And for me, after doing the interview, even just playing one of his songs after having talked to him, you know, for a couple hours, him and his mom on the phone, and hearing his backstory, which is more than they tell on America's Got Talent, is really just an incredible journey, both for his mom and for him, that he is just so positive and such a shining light. And one thing I'll say, both of you, because I talked to Sonia and Joy, is that your moms really love you a lot. And I say that, not that mine doesn't. They do, but they've never gotten the challenges that I have, because they can't see them. And a doctor really didn't tip them off. And I was 35 when this happened. So after I got out of the hospital and did the, you know, had brain surgery, and the guy signed me off, he patted me on the rump and sent me out into the universe. And so none of us knew what to expect. You know, I didn't have a clue either. So while I was trying to figure out what was going on with me, because I was told I was fixed and it was successful, well, wait a minute, I feel my brain not processing right, you know, things that I used to be able to do, not being able to do. You know, I used to be able to juggle six balls in the air, no problem, you know, but a bing, and then just like the little train that could, slugging up the side of the mountain, you know, and all of the things that you were mentioning, not wanting to be around crowds anymore. And I was I liked to party, and I served on boards in my career. I mean, I was used to being around a lot of people, and I quit wanting to do that. And so I never really felt like, you know, even being here 12 and a half years, they've listened to a couple shows. When they found the guest is going to be someone interesting. Well, the host is their daughter.
Right.
Who went through this, and the people that get me are the people that I'm interviewing. But you can't blame someone for something they don't know. And now they've got issues of their own, you know, that they're focused on. And hopefully because of what I went through, I'll be better at dealing with the issues they're going through. But anyway, I was very touched both times that I talked to both moms, because I know that parent relationships, even out of the brain injury world, can be, whatever you want to say, adversarial every now and again. But I really walked away feeling good talking to Sonia and talking to your mom, because they're just really there right by you, your biggest cheerleader, I guess I would say. That's how I felt about Ben's mom, and that's how I felt when I talked to your mom. And anyway, I don't want to make you blush, or and she didn't pay me to say that. She didn't know I would say that. It's just an observation that I made that I think is pretty cool, because not only did you have the inspiration of your friend, but the support of someone who wants nothing but the best for you and wants to be part of making that happen, but not in a smothering kind of way, and trying to find the balance, you know, of how to do it right. And, you know, Sonia was there too. Heck, Ben's married now. You know, she wasn't, Sonia was the only part from the time he was born, you know what I mean, for a long time. So her finding her place in Ben's life now, states away. But nonetheless, I think that for me, just the observation that that everybody should be so lucky, you know, to have somebody who serves as a great motivation to us, and then a person or persons who are supportive of what we're going through and willing to help, you know, to be helpful. And if they're being more helpful than we want them to be, then they back off a little and actually hear us when we're talking. And I think that's a really cool thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely know I wouldn't be here today without having both of those elements in my life, having, you know, a friend that's like that, and also having the support of my family. And I also am not naive to knowing that that's not everyone's existence. That's not everyone's reality. It is mine, and I'm lucky to have it. And, you know, I'm grateful for both her and all of the people who have been in my life over the years, because every one of them has played some role in me still being here and being the person I am now. So,
well, I think one of the things for people that don't innately have that, I think we agree that inspirational people are people that are an inspiration to us and support are very integral in the degree of recovery and getting off the bench and taking recovery type action. Then I'd maybe suggest, and then we're going to go back to your story and go back to the interview. Sorry, I interrupted us, but, you know, would be, if you're here in the community and you're feeling like, damn, he is a lucky guy, I don't have that. You know, I have a reason to keep a bad attitude, you know, because I don't have that that loving family member and that friend who inspires me. Again, we have choices that we make. And if we didn't come with those, that was a huge price, you know, that was paid, a horrible experience to go through for you to have that person of motivation, you know, in your life. But for anybody else, you know, being a disability advocate, you know, going to visit a rehab facility, perhaps, or if there is a brain injury support group in your area. In every state, there's either an association or an alliance with your state's name on it, Brain Injury Alliance, Brain Injury Association of Nebraska, of West Virginia, wherever you're at. That's a place to start by calling them and asking them if there is a support group in the area. You know, then you look for your people that inspire. And you might find them a lot of different places. You know, look at Ben's ministry. It's on the air, you know, every week. There's, and this app we're going to be talking about. But then we go out and look for those people who understand, which are usually, it's usually peer-to-peer support, you know, nothing like another person who's been down the same road, who's going to understand what we feel and perhaps a lot of what we've been through. And that's a way to build a support group around us. So if you know that having support is an integral part of recovery and living a happy life, and that's not something that you came with, it's incumbent on us to find that and create it and to not feel bad about reaching out, because I guarantee you there's thousands of people out there that feel just like you. And so you could be that beacon that a whole bunch of, that you've been waiting for, but you're the one that takes the first step, and there's all kinds of people out there that would love to be the recipient or to take part in knowing someone else, and you inspire each other and, you know, create a survivor family. And that is something that you can do on your own through a lot of different mechanisms. And we talk about that on the shows, but back to you, Jordan. So, let's see where we left off. You were inspired, and so you wanted to do something. You were ready to get off the bench, maybe let go of some of that guilt, shame, and tune in to some of that inspiration and positive action. So you...
Yeah, so for me... what I first did is I went from Omaha and visited my friend in the rehab facility, and it's imperative that this occurred, and it occurred the way that it did because my friend, knowing the type of person that I am and knowing the kind of guilt that I'll carry for the rest of my life, he took it upon himself to take me outside with dozens of friends and family in a hospital room. He takes me outside, just me and him, and we sit there by the roadside, and he tells me, hey, man, you know, I just want to let you know, I know this isn't your fault. I don't blame you for anything. I don't want you to carry this weight. So he did all he could to relieve me of the guilt. I just think that without any doubt, you know, anybody that has a love for someone else is still going to carry some amount of that guilt forward with them. And I did, and I still do, but even with him not being here and being gone, but it's different, right? It's shifted. It's not the same. I don't carry that weight the same way I used to. But again, so I start having these things come up, and I'm frustrated with friends and other people, and, you know, just not having really the support and the system in place outside of my family, which is great to have. But without the other, it just can't do everything, right? So I kept telling my mom how frustrated I was that no one gets it. My friends don't get it. They don't even get it. And so over the years, I mean, it probably was, geez, probably 10 years of hearing me complain about things like that and the natures of how the system works in terms of having support groups available for people. And so she took it upon herself to take notes. Little to my knowledge, she's remembering and taking notes of these things while still on the back end, making phone calls, talking to hospitals, finding out what things are available in town, and not sending me or suggesting that I go. She herself went and just kind of felt it out, and then would give me a report back and say, hey, listen, I think maybe you should just go try this. And it was great to have, and it is great to have. But it's once a month, and there's literally 30 or 40 people, as well as caregivers and other support systems that are there. So it really becomes hard for people to express, especially when in the moment things are different than, you know, that day. So for every one of us who have brain injuries, we understand that things are on the fly for me. I could wake up tomorrow and just be not in this mood, right? Or I'd have an obstacle to overcome for me to get out of my house today. So it's nice for us to have that understanding, and also those systems don't break down when we're not able to go to a support group that happens once a month in the middle of Omaha, right? So it's not even convenient for people who don't live around this area. So
I didn't even know we had one anymore.
Right, I think Emmanuel still does one, and I think one of them was for spinal cord support, and I went and I asked them to let me participate in the spinal cord because I wanted to learn as much as I possibly could about the life that my friend was going to endure. So they allowed me to participate in that, and they were fantastic people. I mean, I met and learned about, you know, some of the difficulties and some of the obstacles that they would face and that he would end up facing. You know, some things embarrassing that you don't want your grown man, 30-year-old friend to know about you. But at the same rate, I want to know, because if I need to help you, I want to be able to help you.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think we just had a brain injury support group for, like, we never had one. And then we had one down at UNMC for a year. And then it went away. And one of the biggest complaints, because I was asked to speak at it and then I took part in it, but what you said pretty well nailed it, is there was people from all over the state. God, these one people drove 2.5 hours to get there. And this was, like, weird, because I'm kind of night blind. Well, I don't drive at night. I'm night blind. I could drive to the corner and back, but you wouldn't want to put me out on the road for any length of time. And when the clocks change and it's dark at 4 o'clock, and this group was like at 7:30 or some darn thing, and these people, I made it a point, because I was doing radio, and there's someone on Brain Injury Radio 7 nights a week from the comfort of your home by calling in to that same number that you called into. And so I wanted to offer that to people and greet them. And there was a few from Omaha, but you're right, it was once a month. And these people that drove 2.5 hours there and then 2.5 hours back, you know, it was like, I remember it was October when they had that first meeting, and it was the guy with the brain injury and his wife that was driving, and, you know, they just said they had waited, you know, for this thing to start, was sad that it was only once a month, and that once the snow flew, they weren't going to be able to come, you know, to the group. It's too bad they didn't have one in the daytime, and ultimately it wasn't a lack of participation at all that chased it out of town. It was politics, really, between two, when I mentioned earlier, there's associations and alliances. You've got quite a few groups chasing the same dollar. And in this particular case, like I say, political argument, it was an association that was sponsoring that group that set up that support group. And then they changed to an alliance, and I don't know, everything somehow got screwed up. I had quit going to the thing, but I'm pretty convinced that, and I would do it, but I'm doing this. So somebody out there, I must say, whether you live here in Middle America, where turns out we happen to live, or wherever you are, you know, starting a peer-to-peer support group meeting where, you know, maybe you go to a rehab center and you ask for other people that have suffered a traumatic brain injury. And if you want it to just be people, survivor people, and not a mix of the caregivers and the survivors, which that's good for one thing. But for the other thing, it's going to inhibit past to say. So I can see the merit in having just a survivor meeting, just a caregiver meeting, as well as a blended meeting. But, you know, if you go to a rehab center or you look on the internet, there's all kinds of TBI groups. There might even be one for your area. But finding out if there's people interested in taking part in a support group, you know, there's a lot of restaurants right now. I used to arrange meetings for a different group. And, you know, libraries will often let you use a basement room in the library. Restaurants who are really hurting right now, a lot of them, have party rooms, and they don't charge for them as long as people eat. So if you made it a lunch meeting or a dinner meeting, even if you ate light kind of a thing, just so you were spending some money, then they're making some money is better than the none they would be making otherwise. And you can set up a weekly meeting. What I'm saying is you can do whatever you want if you're starting the meeting. You know, you can make it a weekly meeting. You can make it a twice a month meeting. And then you also, it's a peer-to-peer support meeting. It's not being led by, you know, a group that purports to represent us, but they aren't us.
Yeah, truly just a bunch of nurses that work at the hospital.
Thank you.
Good
and nice
people,
of them
absolutely.
To help get it started, and great of them to get the ball up and rolling. But I think the takeaway on that is, this is how it's done. Now go do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To not keep hearing it that way and having speakers like me come, I think which there was nothing wrong with that, you know, a time or two. But I think what's really needed in those groups is peer-to-peer support, where survivors can actually say what's on their mind and heart. Talk, where they can talk about it and not sit there and listen to a medical professional or have to be inhibited in what they're saying, and just be able to have a discussion and not have limits on it like that. So I appreciate the nurses and those that try to get these groups set up. And they would be the ones that would help feed us the people to participate, certainly. But they don't need to be part of it. They don't need to start it. In fact, if you're thinking of doing this, because I know there's a lot of you out there that want to do some support service, excuse me. You want to do some service work because you've heard it rumored that if you do service, in the end it helps you more than the people even that you're putting the service out there for. So, you know, you approach it. I'm going to start or take a friend. Me and my friend are going to start a peer-to-peer, is the way you want to put it, a peer-to-peer support group for TBI. And you will have, you know, you might go out on a fact-finder mission first and just say, you know, I've got ideas of where it could be and how often it could be, but I think right now this is a fact-finder mission. If you know anyone who would be interested in participating in this kind of thing, and, you know, give an email or whatever you feel comfortable with, see what the response is, and then you can kind of talk about it together. You know, would we want this to be once a week? You know, do we want to shoot for that? Or, you know, would we want it to be twice a month, once a month in the daytime, at night? And then, like I say, I really recommend restaurants that have party rooms. I've set up probably 60 different meetings in town over, well, pre-pandemic, but the decade prior to that. And so many restaurants have party rooms, and they won't charge a fee for you to be there. And that's probably good, too, keeping it out of the hospital. Or not, you know, if a hospital wants to give you a room to have a meeting in, but with the understanding it's peer-to-peer support, then it's possible that patients might be able to come to that meeting. So that would be a good thing too. But I think really driving home the point that it's something you're starting, and it's going to be a peer-to-peer support meeting, and they don't need to do anything but refer, because they are really busy right now, as we've all heard, especially with the pandemic. Everybody is super understaffed, and so I think it would be even easier to set something like that up at this time without it being led by the medical profession. I'm sorry, I keep doing that to you. Back to you, Jordan.
Oh, you're fine. I agree with you 100%. I believe it would be nice to see some of that get out a little bit and have us be in a little bit more control, which is where kind of some of the app comes into play in terms of the division. Like I've told my mom a bunch of times, I truly feel like the app not only would benefit users like myself, but also the caretaker or the caregiver. People like my mom who are just looking for, you know, a community that supports them as well. Like I just give as an example, when people are in Alcoholics Anonymous, or when you're a family member who is in Alcoholics Anonymous, they also have Al-Anon or another support group for the family members of that individual. And so
yeah,
it's important that those be two separate things. And mm-hmm. I fully believe that it's important that you not only have the one, but you have both. And that it's
absolutely
the same way with the app. I don't believe that the app is going to be, you know, something that just changes people's worlds completely by itself. I believe it's going to be something that you can use in concert with these other support groups, these other support systems, things that are already in place. This is just going to help streamline it and help make it more accessible.
Well, tell us about the app, and how do you know how to make an app?
I don't. And I don't know anything
okay.
about much. So basically, the thoughts behind the app was to try to make something as configurable, meaning the user has powers to toggle features on and off in almost all aspects of our application. So if there's certain things that you don't want to have or you don't want to see, you don't have to. So it doesn't complicate the user's home screen with a bunch of stuff. I mean, they can literally pinpoint the couple things, or if there's anything at all, stuff that definitely applies to what they use on a regular basis. And the other thing with it,
what are some of those things? Sorry.
Oh, like one of the things would be peer to what's that?
Sorry, I was going to say, I'm sorry. You can finish what you had to say, but then tell us when you're done some of the things that are on this app that people can look forward to using, the tools that are on there, because I get where you're coming from. All of our support systems, I call it a bag full of arrows in our quiver. You know, there's never just one magic bullet that fixes us, but you're right. The more tools we have working in concert, and that was a perfect way to put it, the better it's going to be. So what issues does the app address? But if you even remember what you were saying when I interrupted you, you could finish that.
Sure.
And then tell us about the app features.
Yeah, basically, I will leave the app features and all of those things. I'll let my mom go ahead and break that down. I think she's been working real hard on that stuff on a pretty regular basis with the dev team, so she'll probably have some better, higher knowledge information to give you on that level. But for me, it's a matter of the separation. There will be a portal for caregivers, meaning that they can all connect with each other, and then there will be a portal for the actual users. So we'll have a separation of those two entities, as well as kind of a connected place for them to also, you know, be in the same space together, so that they can still have that like fringe element of I'm involved, but I'm not directly involved, so that they can get tidbits of information. For example, for me, one of the bigger things that I always struggled with my mom was she always wondered day in and day out how I was doing in terms of my emotional state. I struggle with depression and anxiety a lot. So there were times where rather than me being able to call her or talk to her on a regular basis, she would just call me. And out of concern, you know, wanting to make sure I'm doing okay. But it also would be something that would affect her day if she didn't hear from me and didn't have that information. So it got to the point where it feels like I'm being interrogated all the time. So it just became frustrating. It became less of like a mother-son relationship and more of a manager-employee type relationship. And that started to kind of make things harder on both of us. And so what the application does is there's a feature called a check-in. Well, a check-in is something I schedule every day, sometimes multiple times a day, just depends. But I schedule it at least once a day, and I check in. And with the check-in, I can give my mom an update on my emotional state with one of five different emojis that are, you know, up the scale from happy to mad to neutral. And then underneath that, it's also gives you a text box or text window to be able to give yourself some notes or enter any type of information that you may want or you may want them to see. So what that will then do is once I check in, it sends out a notification based upon I set up primary caregivers. Those people would receive my notification updates. So it automatically, they don't have to have the app on their phone. As long as their phone is on and working and has service, they will receive a push notification is what it's called. Essentially, once I check in, it sends them a text message. That text message contains my name, contains what it's about. And then if I left a message in that check-in, it also gives them that information as well. So for me, if I check in bad or if I'm having a rough day, I can say, hey, man, I had a really, really hard time sleeping last night. And she can call me rather than questioning. She can call me with like, okay, well, what happened last night? And it doesn't have to be a, you know, let me catch you up kind of a thing. You're already caught up. Now it's let's address the problem. Let's try to look for solutions.
Yeah, that's also really, I think that's super cool. Both that you have the separate portals for the caregivers who have their unique set of issues and survivors who have their unique set of issues, but then because they go together, a way that the groups can interact. And I like the rest of everything that you said too, because more and more I've noticed anyway, you know, I'm probably more your mom's age or older, and you know, even checking in with, you know, my husband, our grandkids, I guess, or his daughter, who's in her early 30s, those people don't use the phone, you know? They don't answer their telephone. I mean, you text them, and you're lucky if you get a text back 3 days later. I mean, I don't know what the hell happened over a generation, but yes, I can see in a survivor situation where obviously someone cares enough to be concerned, but at the same time, I know I felt like you did at the beginning of my journey with some of those check-ins, and you know, there's a lot of learning to be done, and that's why I'm glad for the separate support area too, because you know, a lot of times things I would hear is, you know, you shouldn't feel that way. Well, okay, I do. We don't have anything to talk about. You know, that's not productive.
Yeah, something you wouldn't likely hear from a survivor.
Right.
Not
right.
To feel that way. You're entitled to feel
right.
Every which way you want to feel about it.
Right, right, because I am fortunate, you know, and I went through guilt of course I'm grateful that I didn't wind up as your friend did or as Ben did. Of course I'm grateful for that. But does that mean in my own frame of reference, living in my skin, comparing my life before to my life today, that I don't have some issues that I've got a right to have and feel without feeling guilty or ashamed of them or less than, like I don't have a right to have these feelings because so many other people are worse off. You know, I don't need to be told that. That just makes me feel worse. It doesn't make me feel better, and that's not the direction we want to go. If you know what I mean, you know, not the direction we want to go. So it is, I really love the idea that there's two different groups because the caregivers can talk about, like you said, your mom goes to solution then, you know, she's not, you've gotten past the inquisition part and then it sounds like your mom goes to solutions, not challenging the way you feel or what you've said, but she knows how to respond better than to the survivor. And I think that's why it's good the survivors have a group of their own. They can talk about their side of it, their frustrations, but they can also talk about how to be able productively be able to help the survivor, which is going to make their life easier and the relationship more smooth, and that caregiving more productive, because telling someone how they can or should feel just isn't, everybody already knows how they feel and they got a right to that. the caregivers too, you know. So I love the way that it's laid out, that there's a separate portal for each and then a way to get together, and that you can facilitate the concern, you know, in this case your mom, or just to the audience, you can be able to communicate with your loved one and let them know how you're doing and send messages, any relevant information, and be able to communicate. Excuse me, because communication is very important. So I love the layout of everything you just said.
Yeah, I also think it's important to be able to be proactive rather than try to be reactive all the time about stuff. So again, it's, you know, you're able to start to maybe witness some patterns through check-ins, or you're able to associate certain days where you've had certain things that you've had to do, which it basically ties your calendar within your phone. The app pulls in your calendar. So if you have events scheduled within your calendar, you'd be able to witness those also within the app. But then, I don't know, I just feel like there's certain things that occur throughout the day where maybe we're not connecting the dots and can't say, oh, well, this happened, and that's why I was having a hard time either sleeping or processing something through that day.
Right.
But at least this way, it's kind of like a little bit of a journal in a sense. You can start to use those check-ins to not only help people who are in your life have a little information, but also as a reflective tool for yourself to look back and say, oh, okay, yeah, I've done this thing now for 2 solid weeks and I'm seeing some real progress, or I'm not, or, you know, you can start to then make tweaks and adjustments to your routine and how you get through your days and stuff. But I truly feel like the more you trial and error things in and out of, you know, trying to really balance out how the new you is, as opposed to the old you, pre-accident you, would have been able to do things.
Right. I agree. And the other thing I can see in patterns is recognizing your triggers. And you kind of said that. But, you know, if there's certain, after certain days, times, whatever, that you feel a certain way, then I would think if you're, like you say, if it's coming out kind of like journaling, then if you look back, you'll be able to see some patterns. Like, I know, because you're right, it's late and it's not my fault. When this show started, the person who started the network is in Spokane, so the show's on from 7 to 9 for them. Which the only thing I can say is I'm grateful I'm not one of our East Coast hosts that's on from 10 to midnight, you know. We're on 9 to 11. But now, not so much when I first started, but I'm 12 and a half years older now. Thursdays is probably not a good day for me. I'm more tired on Thursdays. So it's probably not a day I should book with a lot of things that are going to require a good deal of my focus. And you wouldn't believe, with your app, I probably would have noticed that pattern years before I noticed that pattern. I should probably also, when I'm tired, not make any real major decision or get into a discussion that could escalate into a conflict, you know, with anybody at home or anyone I care about, knowing that I'm probably a little tired from focusing and being on air a couple hours the night before. And then it's like, I don't know what kind of activity that you do, that I'm not tired right when I get off because I've had my nap before the show and my energy level goes up, you know, to do the shows. And so it takes me a while to unwind after the show, so I'm probably up later on Wednesday nights than I am on a lot of the other nights. And so, you know, with that app, I probably would have recognized that Thursdays I should plan judiciously, taking into account Wednesday night. So that's cool.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything else that she wanted to add.
We have about, go ahead. I was just going to say we've got about a half hour left, and we've left your mom in the corner. Maybe we should bring her out to tell us.
Yeah, so I figured she's got some more high-level stuff to talk about, I'm sure.
I have enjoyed listening to you guys. So.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, if Jordan has anything to say, certainly jump in, but we'll go ahead and give the mic to your mom now and hear more about the app and your part in this as a caregiver and how you're participating and about the app.
Well, I think as a caregiver, you don't realize what's happening to you exactly because of the trauma that someone you love dearly has experienced. So I think it kind of creeps up on you, but you find yourself worrying constantly. You're fearful constantly. You worry constantly, and it kind of takes over your life, and you can't stop it. It's the craziest thing. I wish there was a way you could just go on and not think about it, but it doesn't happen that way. And so for me, I became kind of, Jordan called me mom manager because I became that person. But I think it's also hard for caregivers because when you get that call that says, you know, mom, I just don't think I can live another day like this. Your heart just stops. You're not quite sure what to do with that information. And there's no good solutions in our world for when things happen that way. And so I think the fear from caregivers is legitimate. And I think, you know, like you guys feel how you feel, I think caregivers also have something they carry around after someone they love has gone through a trauma or a traumatic experience. And so it's interesting to me that it did start affecting our relationship, and our relationship became more adversarial than it was helpful. And so I started looking for everything I could find. I read everything I could find. I researched everything I could find to try to find things to help us. And there, I found a ton of information, as you know. I mean, there's millions of people living with traumatic brain injury. We're the only ones. But there was a lot of information, but nobody was doing anything with the information to make life better for people. And so that's when I talked with Jordan, and Jordan actually helped design the features of the app. And the features of the app are there. It's threefold. We have daily life routines, and these routines aren't pre-built. We have template routines that are pre-built to show you what the app can do. And if you like the template routines, you're more than welcome to use them, or you can edit them and save them as a personal routine. But you can actually build your routines from scratch. So if there's certain things that you do every day or that you do every week, you can build them, and you can add multimedia to them. You can add pictures to them. You can we have text to speech. So like I cheat, and if I have a recipe that I want, I've built it in the app. It talks to me so I don't have to try to read it. And so, I mean, there's a lot of things that are very cool. And it's not just a to-do list. You can make it fun. It isn't something that is a therapy app. It's not that. It's really a life app to just kind of support you when your brain doesn't feel like it's working the best. And all of us have days like that. So as I get older, I notice more of them. But you can you use the routine builder, and you can use that. Jordan told you about the check-in feature. I can't tell you, when he's having a good day, I have a good day. I have a better day. When when he's struggling, I know that if there are a few days in a row that we see that, then we need to take some type of action. And so just knowing that helps without me having to call him and ask, giving him back his independence, and it's also given me back mine to an extent. So, and then there's also the third piece of it is a community support. You know, it's funny because you don't walk up to someone and introduce yourself and say, hey, my name is Jordan, I have a traumatic brain injury, right? So nobody knows each other. There are millions of people living life after a brain injury for whatever reason. And the connection that you have together is the most natural and the most powerful connection I have ever witnessed. When you get a group of you together and start talking, no one could take the place of that, because you have to have walked that path in order to do it. And as much as I love my son and he means the world to me, I cannot feel what he feels. But other people like him, inherently you just relate to each other, and no one can replace that. So with the app, the hope is there are millions of people around the world. We want to connect, and if we can connect them, then the hope is that geographically they can start those support groups that you were talking about, Kim. But right now, you have to figure out where they're at. There's nothing connecting you guys together into a community of people that are faced with that same life challenge.
Right. You know, another someday, I mean, the app, I want to talk more about the app as is, because it sounds fantastic. But one way, you know, with winter coming, and because we've all gotten kind of accustomed to Zoom because of COVID, it might be nice. I saw Jordan brought up other kinds of meetings, and I saw an app the other day that said, I guess it just listed online support groups, and it served as a central clearinghouse. I'm not even sure how other ones would report it, but on Zoom, you know, feasibly, you can drop into a support group that somebody is having in, you know, a Zoom meeting that they're having in New York, you know, or...
Right.
California, right. Or something like that. I was going to say that would be neat.
You can connect with people all around the world.
On the app now?
Anyone who downloads the app from the Apple Store or the Google Play Store would have access to connect with each other.
Okay, and I gave the, excuse me just a minute, I'm going to go back to, I gave the website, I'm going to repeat that for everybody now and repeat that it's in the program notes if you don't happen to be by a pen, but it's lightbridgeinc.com, and that will tell you about the app. And what made you said that Jordan came up with features for the app, but how did you know how to go about doing this? How did this happen? The need was there. The problem was there, but you guys came up with a great solution for a pocket of problems. How did that happen?
I had placed technology people for the last 20 some years. And so I knew a lot of techies in the world, and I knew enough about technology probably to be dangerous. And I tell Jordan all the time that had we known what it was going to be like, or had I known, I probably wouldn't have started. Because that's how some of these things work, right? So what you don't know is usually a good thing anyway. And as you grow and as you learn, and it takes you places you never thought you would go, that's kind of how the app ended up. And our goal and Jordan's goal all along was to build something to help other people not have to go through 21 years of struggle and try to find support like he did. And so it was the, you know, you're not alone, basically, was kind of our mission. And it was a matter of tying people together and building a community of people who could support one another because they inherently knew what it was like to live life that way. And so, but also at the same time, we built it so that I would get off of his back, him, and that I would not be mom manager, and then I would go back to being just mom. So he can build any routine that he wants. And we've built trash day routines, which, by the way, I use as well. Just to remind yourself, you know, clean out your fridge before trash day. Clean out, you know, your, empty all your trash. And we do that. We have a calming routine. And everybody has kind of different things they use for that, for calming themselves. You build it into this routine, and it's on demand for you. It's there whenever you need it. And so we just kind of ended up in this world that we tried to solve our problems, basically. And by doing so, we didn't realize at the time how many people we would be able to help until it was done. And once the app, and I don't even mean done, because I don't, software is never done, you know.
Right.
It will always be evolving and changing based on what you and members like you give us feedback on, because we will continue to make it better. We know we don't know everything. We only know our situation, and we tried to solve for that. But we believe that it's we're seeing positive results. Jordan and I are seeing positive results. Our relationship has changed since we've been using it. And I don't know any other way to tell people other than just give it a try, because it really, truly has made a difference in our world.
That's really awesome. It's empowering for both of you, and it was no coincidence that you knew people in the tech community, and you're right about not knowing ahead of time. You just knew the right people, but you didn't know what an undertaking it was going to be. But I don't think that, like I say, I don't think that that was coincidence. That was just cool that you knew those kinds of people. I see these apps popping up all the time, and I'm Stone Age. I have no idea how they do that. But you knew, you know, you knew somebody who could do that. And, of course, you guys had the input on both sides. And, again, I think it's a great app for both survivors and caregivers, because they each have a unique point of view but need to communicate their points of view and understand each other. You know, I think a lot of times, well, with survivors, I can't speak to caregivers, but, you know, the focus is on us, you know, and I won't speak for Jordan on that. I'll just say that, you know, for me, like I said, I was 35, so I had a lot of life to compare before and after, too. And so I was thinking in terms of that, and my parents weren't in a traditional caregiver, quotes, situation, except that their only child almost died. So they had the same concerns. They weren't, you know, I stayed there for, in fact, I'll tell you, one you can appreciate, Jordan and Joy, probably the app, Jordan might get it a little more, but I was supposed to stay there for a month or I would have had to go in rehab, and my parents were gracious enough to let me come and stay in their home for a month. But at the 3-week point, I begged my surgeon to let me go home, home to my house, but I happened to live there alone. And, you know, he made me promise if I had certain issues that I would go back or go to rehab. And of course I promised, but it was a really tough couple of weeks. But it was because, you know, they were worried. I mean, they had just seen me in a coma for 11 days and almost die. And of course, they had their feelings about it, but, you know, my dad went to work and my mom hovered. And I wanted to be well, damn it. They said they fixed me. You know, and that's something that's really hard to express to somebody because you're obviously not in your right mind physically or mentally, and it's pretty obvious to everyone around you. But I wanted to be so bad. In fact, one of the things I did, a lot of people sent flowers, stuffed animals, things to me. And I come from a generation where you wrote thank you notes. And my mom had some thank you notes there. And of course, no one expected to get a thank you note from me till months out, and wouldn't have thought anything if they didn't, you know, based on what they knew. And in that 3 weeks I was at their house, I sat down and insisted on writing out those thank you notes, and I messed them up. Every one of them, for every one I did, I messed one up and had to crumple it up and throw it away. And it was a really frustrating, ticked me off thing. But you know what it was about. Of course, I didn't know it then, but it was about control. I had just lost complete and total control of my life. And I needed to hang on to something I thought I could control. And that was those frickin' thank you notes. It's crazy when you look at it in retrospect, but that's just what it was, you know. But I mean, she was holding on to the back of my robe when I was walking and just always hovering. I get it, you know, that she was concerned, but it was making me nervous. And I didn't want that. I didn't want to be in that position, you know. So I just wanted to go home. So I spent a lot of time in bed or not walking. And I was fortunate they and some other friends, you know, dropped food by and did that kind of thing. Or I never could have gone home. I had a lot of nice people checking in and doing things, but I just couldn't stay and be hovered over. And I get it in retrospect, both sides. And that's one reason why this app is so important. You know, something like this app is so important because both feelings are valid. When we're at the heat of recovery, I mean, at the point of impact part, immediately after, you know, we want things to be normal so much and want to be able to have the power to unring the bell, and we just don't. And you guys, the caregivers, know it. You know, the ones who have known us our whole life, you know, and loved us our whole life know it. But, you know, you can be pretty determined to want to be able to control something when you've had that come to Jesus moment where you've almost lost your life, when you thought you were bulletproof, and then find out that you're not functioning the way you were before. You know, you hear people say cliche things about, you know, living a day at a time because you're not guaranteed any more than that, and how quickly, you know, lives can change, and you hear all that stuff, but you're never going to think it's, you never think it's going to be you till it is. Mm-hmm. And then there's no handbook for it. You know, especially back when I had mine, it was as simple as brain surgery, fixing it, and sending me out into the universe without any warning. That, and I asked a doctor later, why didn't they say something? And they said, well, because in the event that that stuff didn't come up, they didn't want to put it into your brain. And I said, Jesus, that is the most, I get your logic in that, but that is one of the meanest, most cruel things, to leave me thinking I was crazy or that I was the only one experiencing what just about everybody mm-hmm. who went through what I went through is experiencing. That was cold, you know, let me swim those waters by myself and not tipping me or tipping my folks or, you know, anything like that. And so, again, I think that a lot of these things like this app created by caregivers and survivors are really geared toward people who understand. So, you know, for the audience that's listening, I really wanted to have Jordan and Joy on tonight to talk about the app, because we're always looking for new tools of recovery. That's what we talk about on here every week, a wide variety of different things, but we've never talked about an app before that's actually created by a survivor and a caregiver. So I encourage you to check it out. And, you know, it sounds like it's definitely impacted and empowered both Jordan and Joy. And would you also, for the same reasons? And I think that, you know, there's a contact on there, or a way to contact. And like Joy said, software is always evolving. And if they haven't thought of it, I'm sure they're open to, have you ever thought of the, you know, and it might be productive as it morphs, grows, and changes, if it even needs to. Everything might already be there. So I'll be looking forward to checking it out. And I really appreciate you guys being on and sharing your story tonight, and then creating this tool of recovery. I thought it was neat because I have people coming in and talking about alternative types of therapy and inspiration, and then survivor stories, and they talk about what they've done, and it might be, you know, like your friend, somebody has joined an advocacy group and goes out and does speaking. A lot of me doing radio, you know, a lot of people who have been through being survivors, the way we've dug ourselves out of the hole is by doing something that benefits other survivors, and that in turn helps us as well. And so I think that's really cool, because this is the first time, I know it's the first time in 12 and a half years that a survivor-based app has been brought on by a guest who's a survivor and a caregiver. So that's really awesome. So if you guys are looking out there, audience, for an app that can help you with your day-to-day and your relationship with caregivers or other survivors, you definitely want to check out LightBridgeInc.com and check out the app. Anything else from either of you?
No, I'm. He pretty much covered it.
No, just thank you very much, Kim, for having us on, for sure. And we appreciate everybody listening, and we look forward to anybody's feedback on the app. I mean, you can reach us through the website. Just shoot us a little note. It says, "Be in touch." And shoot us a note, let us know what you think, and if there's anything we can do to support you, please let us know that as well.
Sure will. Well, thank you so much for being on. And Jordan, I'm glad that you were inspired and frustrated enough and joy that you knew the right people and were willing enough to do this partnership, because it's all about communication and relationships, and those are the things that suffer, you know, behind brain injury survivors and caregivers. And so this is just really, I think, a gift of not just survival, but thriving after an injury. So I appreciate you being on, and I appreciate what you've done.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for being here. Again, this is Joy Lewis and Jordan Hallstrom. There's no R in there. Hallstrom. You can see that it's getting late. Jordan Hallstrom and Joy Lewis. And make sure to check out LightBridgeInc.com. And thank you too so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And I'll be checking out the app myself, and stay in touch. Come back.
We will. Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Good night. Okay, everybody. How exciting. I love it when we have the opportunity to discover new tools to make our life easier, to take care of some of those things that were head scratchers or caused frustration for us. And, you know, another survivor comes by and is able to give us an answer. We're well aware of the problem. It's answers that we're sometimes short on. So I appreciate Jordan sharing his story. And, you know, his mom knowing the right people and being able to put this thing together. So make sure to check out the app, and do seek peer-to-peer support groups in your area. And if there's not one, don't be afraid to be the one who starts it, because know that there's a bunch of people out there sitting on the fence just like you. And they're just waiting for somebody to make that first step and you'll find more to participate. So I want to thank you all for listening. I'll be back next Wednesday. Good night. God bless. And I'm going to close with, long as I had local Midwest people, I'm going to use one of my local Midwest musicians, Daniel Christian. And this is something apropos, I guess, to the app that we were just talking about. But you can find Daniel Christian at danielchristianmusic.com. And this song, aptly enough, is called Find My Voice, something that app helps you do. See y'all next week. Good night.
The question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. Brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. Never knew I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in, it's hard to tell who you really are.